Welcome to Interviews for Resistance. Since election night 2016, the streets of the U.S. have rung with resistance. People all over the country have woken up with the conviction that they must do something to fight inequality in all its forms. But many are wondering what it is they can do. In this series, we'll be talking with experienced organizers, troublemakers, and thinkers who have been doing the hard work of fighting for a long time. They'll be sharing their insights on what works, what doesn't, what has changed, and what is still the same. I am Sarah Jaffe, your host.
I am Jordan Estevao, a senior strategist at People's Action, and I oversee our climate justice program.
All right. And so Donald Trump is trying to destroy the planet. Can you tell us what exactly his order today was repealing?
So the big part that we're concerned about, and there are several regulations that he is overturning or attempting to overturn with this EO. But the one that we're most interested in is the Clean Power Plan, which is the United States' main contribution to the Paris Accords to reduce climate change. And every major emitter, including China, agreed to reduce carbon emissions by a certain amount in order to avoid catastrophe. The United States set a target of 30% reduction, and this was our main way to get there, and it required every state to reduce its carbon emissions by a certain amount by a certain time. So if it doesn't go into effect, that's a bad thing. That said, even the Clean Power Plan, we only saw it as a good start to getting where we actually need to go.
Yeah, and so the Clean Power Plan, as I understand it, was it also had to be done state by state, correct?
Exactly right, yep. And so every state was assigned a certain percentage by which to reduce its emissions. You know, it ranged from like 5% or actually 0% in states like Vermont to 30-40% in some of the higher emitting states where there's more coal-fired power production and so on.
I guess the thing that I'm thinking about with this is if it's state by state and there's a federal executive order on this, the states that want to can go ahead and do this anyway, correct?
That's exactly our approach to this is, yeah. You know, there are multiple states that had no plans to comply anyway. And actually, since last summer, it's kind of been in limbo, the regulation, because as Antonin Scalia's final act as a Supreme Court justice, he issued a stay on on the order, which kind of has left the states that wanted to keep on complying on track and some states kind of waiting to see what happens. But yeah, there's still lots of potential to like win good policy. So our Illinois affiliates, Illinois People's Action, Fair Economy, yeah, Illinois, just recently passed the Illinois Future Energy Jobs Act, which is going to double Illinois' renewable energy production. It's going to invest between $500 and $750 million in low-income communities for energy efficiency, renewable energy, job training so that low-income people can get into that kind of work, and so on. So I think what a lot of folks on the right and in the Trump administration are missing is that, you know, the transition to clean energy and to energy efficiency actually could be a huge economic driver and a way to revitalize our economy, especially since, you know, the coal industry is already going under. It's already being undercut by fracking and low oil prices. Coal companies have been going bankrupt at a really high clip with no end in sight. You know, he's not going to bring those jobs back. Like, there's no bringing them back. What we do need to do is figure out where we can invest so that we can start to rebuild an economy that actually puts people to work and also is good for our environment and slows climate change.
Yeah, and so Donald Trump notoriously already did this with a bunch of coal miners standing behind him, right? So obviously this is this argument that we're going to bring back these jobs. And so one of the reasons that I reached out to People's Action first for a comment on this was just because your organizing comes out of organizing around the economy as well, that this is moving into climate justice has been an outgrowth of organizing in low-income communities that certainly understand the need for good jobs. So I wonder if you could talk about the way in your organizing those two things connect.
Absolutely. So we are a racial and economic justice organization, and we see climate change and the environment as massive economic and racial justice issues. In order to reduce what are already unacceptable levels of pollution, especially in low-income communities and communities of color, in order to slow climate change, to mitigate the effects, to create resilient communities, we're going to have to make huge economic and industrial shifts. And we know historically that over and over again, large industrial shifts for the past 40, 50 years have tended to drive inequality. So in other words, when the economy expands or a certain sector of the economy expands, it tends to leave certain communities behind. So, I mean, there's tons of example, but look at the information technology boom and how large swaths of the community have been left behind there. If you go to the Bay Area, you know, if you go to San Francisco, there's hardly any Black people left because not everyone benefited equally from that industrial growth. And then if you look at the other flip side of it, like the housing crash, when the economy contracts, when industries contract, everyone gets screwed, but it's low-income folks and communities of color that get screwed even more. And no one lost more equity in the housing crash than Black and Latino households and Asian households for that matter. And there's no sign of that coming back. So the economy is shifting sooner or later. And, you know, the best that the Trump administration and big oil can hope to do is slow it down. We're going to stop relying on fossil fuels. We're going to have to become more energy efficient. We're going to have to look at renewable energy sources. And, you know, we're really interested in making sure that those industries are themselves equitable and just, that we make the kind of choices that bring up the working class rather than exploiting them. So, for example, if a state, Illinois, for example, is going to invest in energy efficiency, does that mean that it's going to subsidize corporations to build energy efficient skyscrapers, or are we going to invest in the ability for working class homeowners to weatherize and insulate their homes, install double paned windows? Are we going to put people from the community to work doing those jobs as a way to both reduce the cost of energy for households that who are paying over the odds on their energy, and also reduce our carbon emissions, also reduce air pollution? I saw an article recently about a company that wants to make Trump's border wall beautiful and sustainable and energy efficient. And I think that's just like such a golden example of what we're trying to avoid, which is that we have sustainable green industries that are still exploitative and drive inequality.
I'm also looking at an article open on my desktop on my computer right now. The headline is Exxon, let's just highlight that part of the sentence, urges Trump to keep U.S. in Paris Climate Accord. Now, obviously, Trump's Secretary of State is the former head of ExxonMobil. So I'm wondering if you're following all these sort of potential splits in this weird administration and what, you know, what the sort of levers might be for pushing within the administration, if there are any.
Yeah. Our contention is that the way to push the administration is from the bottom up. In other words, to build a bulwark of political will in states and cities and states, a bulwark of resistance so that, you know, regardless of what the federal government does, states are invested in building a clean energy future. And that's really where we want to focus is, you know, Trump is going to do his bull in a china shop thing and make a big mess. But we think that if we're going to be resilient against those kinds of attacks, then it's going to come from the grassroots, from local communities and from states.
So you mentioned Illinois, but where are some other states or cities where there's movement on legislation around this?
State of Maryland just passed a statewide ban on fracking. It's the first legislative ban on state. It's the first statewide legislative ban on fracking that in a state where there are, you know, proven fracking reserves. So, you know, it's just more evidence that, you know, states are making their own agendas and still have lots of latitude to regulate and legislate. around climate and the environment.
And what would you advise for people who want to get involved in this issue who haven't been so before? Because I think we're seeing more and more of that.
People's Action and People's Action affiliate organizations in 30 states, we are moving from protest to power, from resistance to revolution. So we really think that, you know, it's important and it's necessary to resist the Trump agenda, to protest the Trump agenda, but we shouldn't stop there. We shouldn't get hung up on it or obsessed with federal regulation and legislation. There's tons of work to be done in cities and states. That's where we're going to build the bottom-up infrastructure to really shift the political winds in this country. So our affiliates are recruiting candidates for office. They're talking to candidates about their agendas and looking for candidates to support an agenda that puts people and planet above corporate profits. And this is going on all across the country, loads of organizations to get involved in. And we're training folks, not just to run for office, but also to how to be an effective volunteer in a campaign, how to run a local legislative campaign, whether it's for school board or for rural electric cooperative or for mayor or the state government. There's no shortage of work to be done. And we really think that cities and states should be the big priority for how we not just, beat back and resist the worst of Trump's policy agenda, but also how we actually build the political power to shift the country back to a more sane course.
And how can people keep up with you and People's Action?
You can follow us at People's Action on Twitter at People's Action and at People's Action Institute.
Interviews for Resistance is a project of Sarah Jaffe with assistance from Laura Faillebois and support from the Nation Institute. You can find more information at necessarytrouble.org. Thanks for listening.